Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show brought to you by Roman. I'm Blair Andrews on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair, and my co-host is Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. Hassan, how's it going?
It's going, it could have been better, actually. The quarterfinals are here. I lost a couple to lower seeds who are going on to score the highest points total of the week on among all teams in the quarters. So this is a little frustrating here, but there's still a bunch of teams of mine that are left out there kicking going forward, the one that got the bye. So let's hope we can bring home some chips. What about yourself?
Wait, are you telling me fantasy football's still going on? It didn't end last week after all my teams got eliminated?
No. There's the other final 3 weeks, a big combination. I'm sure you're in quite a few.
I hope one day to experience this.
It's a good time, and it's had by all, because week 13 just was a disaster of a week. I'm glad it's over, and somehow week 14 is just as bad. So here we are limping to the end of the season, just in some kind of shape.
In some kind of shape, yeah. Week 14, actually, for the most part, was pretty good to me. So I really don't have much to complain about, but wish I could have had a better week 12 and week 13. We'll just put it that way. Well, I don't know if you can tell, we don't have a guest today. We've been talking a long time without introducing anyone. That's because we are all alone, so we'll be uninhibited by, any guests holding us back. So, yeah, let's get right into it. First item, Emmanuel Sanders caught 7 of 9 targets for 157 yards and one touchdown in the 49ers Week 14 win over the Saints, adding a 35-yard passing touchdown. So this was obviously a huge rebound game for Sanders, given that he had been held to 41 scoreless yards or fewer in four straight games. But what should our expectations for Sanders in this offense be going forward? And how are you approaching sort of the whole 49ers receiving core?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I mean, for a while, we saw Deebo Samuel kind of really come on there. And this was actually, I don't know if any of you guys got the game, but this was realistically just a fantastic game of the season. I'm really excited for these two teams to square off yet again. I really think the reason the Saints lost was because this is karma for that Taysom Hill stuff from Thanksgiving. So this is what you get. This was just... I don't know, man. Like, Manny played incredibly, but like, Deebo Samuel also got 8 targets and he did fairly well. And so did George Kittle, who did fairly well. And the one big interesting thing to me that really stands out here is, first off, Manny Sanders, just a phenom, and he was ridiculously efficient. I'm sure like his fantasy points over expectation are probably up there for the week. He might be, one of the highest guys there. But Raheem Mostert seems to have really announced himself as a real thing here. How are you playing this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, Mostert obviously had the big game. He only had 12 opportunities, though, total. So it's not like he was getting a huge workload, although that was the biggest of any San Francisco running back. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess until further notice, he's kind of the guy in this backfield. I would not feel confident starting him in a playoff matchup, I don't think, but I wouldn't feel confident starting Breida or Coleman either. So this is, to me, almost like you have to avoid. I mean, I think probably one of these guys is always going to have a big game or, rip off a long touchdown. That seems to always happen with a San Francisco running back. So somebody's going to be scoring points, but it's just maybe impossible to tell who. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Is Mostert for real?
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that he kind of is, if only because they seem to be using him fairly intelligently. He's not really getting a lot of touches here or a lot of carries, right? Like, he's kind of getting a handful of the targets. He's just making a lot work with his rushing potential. I think some of it has to be credited to Kyle Shanahan and his scheme, right? Like, he seems to always get this out of his running backs. Is just a bit of a bummer. Tevin Coleman seems to have just become a non-factor here. Like, he used to be so explosive, and now we're 2 years removed, and just that memory of that Tevin Coleman is gone, right? Like, what can you say about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's right about Shanahan. He's just, it's a frustrating situation if you've been a Coleman fan for a while or a Breida fan for a while, because these are a couple guys who I think are probably actually really talented, and then Mostert kind of comes out of nowhere and is actually playing better than them. So I don't know how much credit to I want to give to Shanahan. I mean, you know, it's kind of, we've seen this happening the whole season, so there is maybe something there, but it's really hard to tease out how much is related to running back talent, how much is related to some other team factors, and you know, who knows what's going on with Coleman. I wonder if he might be secretly hurt or something.
I think he kind of is because he did suffer that high ankle sprain at the start of the
That's
season, if
right.
you
Yeah, that's
remember.
right.
Yeah. So, and it's difficult to really play through one of those. And I don't know if he picked up more injuries along the way because he just hasn't looked right. I don't know. And again, like as far as it goes, that there's like my bigger question to you is with a guy like Mostert, like if you were, you know, if you picked him up and you own him in Dynasty, you're not getting anything back for him in like a trade, right? You're just going to hold here.
Yeah, at this point, definitely. I don't think that anyone is ready to give up anything too valuable for Mostert, unless, I mean, maybe you trade him to a contender who's weak at running back for, I don't know, a second at best.
There's no way that that's going to, I mean, well, if you somehow still have trades going on, I really
Oh,
don't
well,
see
right.
that happening. Like, we're past the trade deadline. I mean, like, I tried to actually move Manny Sanders and Marvin Jones around the trade deadline and to contenders, and no one was interested. Fine, Marvin Jones and like Manny, they're not, it's not like I was asking for a lot either. I was asking for really like 2020 third round picks. They're like, nah, I don't really need them. Which oh, that's fine. It's your prerogative. It's not. It's you know, I'm not gonna try and like really make this work. Like I'm trying to already gift you this player who I have zero use for. Someone who's eliminated, but I haven't checked. But I'm really hoping that they're losing their like game this week because like they don't have any good wide receivers, which would be poetry in my book.
Yeah.
Like the idea that you can't even trade for like a you know, a declining veteran like Sanders for like a future third round pick who is it's very rare that you're going to actually hit on them. You know, it's I don't know, a bit of a wash for me, but whatever.
Just goes to show, don't own players like Sanders in Dynasty.
Yeah, that's really more so on me. Like he just kept falling and falling and falling. And again, I'm totally fine with him with absolutely zero value coming back, and like I'm totally fine eating the L if I couldn't since I couldn't move him.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, trade him for any better than that, like when we get back into it for the off season when trades are open. But with the kind of hype this like upcoming rookie class has received, it would not shock me that you're gonna have to really overpay to pry away any of these rookie picks. So good luck. Drew Lock completed 22 of 27 passes for 309 yards, 3 TDs, and an interception in Denver's week 14 win over the Texans. Lock now joins John Elway and Tim Tebow as the only rookie quarterbacks for Denver to throw for at least 300 yards in a game. The Denver aerial offense seems rejuvenated with Lock under center. And what's your outlook for Lock for the rest of the season? And then also more specifically in Superflex Dynasty leagues?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Well, let's take them separately, I guess. The outlook for Locke, I'm pretty optimistic about Locke going forward. I think what he's shown he can do in just this small sample, I think, is pretty encouraging. So I would look for him to continue, maybe not necessarily on this pace, but I think he can probably finish out the season strong. So yeah, in Superflex Dynasty leagues, I really have no idea what it would take to acquire him at this point, but I would want to be trying if you're in a dynasty league that will still allow trades. I think
You'd
well,
have to
he's
give up a
still,
first
you think so?
easily. Yeah, like one of the things that I've really learned in a lot of my Superflex Dynasty leagues this offseason is People are quarterback crazy. They just don't care. Everyone is at worth. Like if you're a starter in the NFL, you are worth a first, apparently. So that's what you have to pay to get someone. So
now, I mean, that's a good point, because I mean, if I'm thinking, if I own Locke after having these two games, like there's a chance he ends up being the starter for a long time, and that is, you know, somebody who is an NFL starting quarterback is something worth having in a Superflex Dynasty league. So I can definitely see, you know, if I owned him, not being willing to give him up after these two games for just anything that came along. So yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like Superflex, like the entire economy is kind of interesting to me. Like just the way, well, it's interesting, and it's also very frustrating when you're on the side that I'm on, which is where most of your quarterbacks are hurt, but your opponents have rostered the backups. Mm-hmm. And so you're left kind of scrambling to just not have a quarterback. And, then you offer to overpay for a young rookie stud. No one's willing to trade those either. So it's just a stagnant market, at least from my personal experiences. If you guys have better experiences, congrats. What's really interesting to me from this game, at least what really stood out to me, was Courtland Sutton was fairly inefficient. It seems like that led to Noah Fant just exploding. And I wonder, I didn't watch the game, but I think this might have been a Houston deciding to zero in on Sutton and try and take him away, because Tim Patrick and even Deshaun Hamilton, that's the guy who just hasn't existed this season, has put up a better stat line from a raw yardage perspective, but Noah Fant just went absolutely nuts. Like he caught four of his four targets for 113 yards and a touchdown. And it seems like Fant's he's seen like the target share of like a wide receiver too after they got, they traded away Manny Sanders. So I'm curious to hear, what are your thoughts on Noah Fant? Where do you think he's going to be drafted next year? In startups and in basketball, like does he fit the profile of that breakout year two tight end that like a Mark Andrews would or George Kittle did or any of that stuff?
He definitely does fit that sort of prototype, I think. So he's someone I would really be looking to acquire aggressively in startups and in basketball next year. I mean, in terms of cost, I would think that he'd probably end up going a little bit earlier than we saw Mark Andrews go this year, don't you think? Just partly because of the success that Mark Andrews has had in his year two jump, but also I think Fant's rookie year is even more impressive in a lot of ways. So that's kind of where I would expect to see him, a little bit earlier than where Mark Andrews was. And I think at that cost, you know, when you're talking about the potential for him to break into sort of the elite tier of tight ends, which I think is definitely a possibility, it's probably worth paying.
That's interesting, because I think Mark Andrews' ADP was pretty depressed for most of the offseason. It kind of got up there, but then it like slid back down during training camp. And now it's, it seems that he's like playing through a bunch of injuries. And then also George Kittle was another guy who people were sleeping on a lot, like during his like massive breakout. And then they overdrafted him this year. Mm-hmm. So that's a fine question, right? Like, are people going to be overdrafting tight ends? Like, some of these guys are going into year three next year, to where they'll be, one or two tight ends full early, and then they're just going to skip over the, Fant and Hockenson. Well, maybe Hockenson might actually go a little bit higher because there's that narrative about him, although he plays in us on a slightly more crowded depth chart. I guess some of that comes out of how the draft will shake out for Denver, right? Like, yeah, if they add another wide receiver, then I don't know. There's another good interesting development actually from this game, and it actually included left for dead Royce Freeman.
Yeah.
And that development is that he had 8 carries for 24 yards, no TDs, but he did have 2 targets. He caught both of them, one of them for a touchdown. Yeah, I mean, they only targeted, so Freeman saw 2 targets, Lindsay saw 2 targets. They were both fairly short yardage, so not a lot of yak there. But Devontae Booker also saw 2 targets, and he was more efficient as a receiver. So does this give you any hope that they're like, that Locke is okay with targeting his running backs, or what do you think is going on here?
A little bit. I mean, six total running back targets is kind of nice to see. But it's not really a useful amount for, not a useful fantasy day for any of these guys. I'm definitely happy to see Freeman get more involved, and hopefully sort of the touchdown will give him a little more, make him a more attractive target in the passing game. Because I think that the whole season, that's kind of been the area where he's excelled. I mean, especially relative to Lindsay, who's actually been slightly inefficient as a receiver this season. So definitely encouraging to see Freeman get more involved in the passing game, and I'm hoping to see a lot more of that. I don't know. What's your outlook on Freeman after this season? He's kind of been up and down, and lately a lot more down until this game. So,
I mean,
what's kind of your dynasty outlook for him?
I mean, this is still pretty down. Like he had really 32 total scrimmage yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think I have any interest in acquiring him, because the people who own him are they basically believe that he's going to be very good. I think he'll have some kind of dead cat bounce, like residual value, like if Denver just doesn't draft a running back. But I think it kind of speaks to, just sort of how talented Lindsay is. Again, if they don't do that, you do want Freeman. I don't know what price you'd be willing to part with him for. I mean, people are out here trading Rashad Penny like for close to 100% of his initial value, because he had like a couple of good games. Mm-hmm. So people are still truly believing that these guys are good, or they're gonna, they're still not expendable, like as if we didn't just see guys with absolutely no draft capital in Chris Carson or Philip Lindsay run, circles around the guys who were actually drafted way earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think some of this just comes down to how the Denver Broncos' backfield looks like. I mean, you want Royce Freeman. I don't know what his price will be or where it will be next year. I mean, I'll be in if it's late, like 10th round or later. Like, I'd have to see what my construction looks like. But yeah, I'd be in on Royce at that price. It depends on what they do with Devonta Booker as well going forward. Like, and then, like I said, like how they approach running back in the draft. They're not going to draft one highly, I don't think. But like, if they draft one or two in the dying rounds, and then they sign a couple, I don't know. That's where it gets interesting. To me, I do think that the team is interested in Lindsay, so it'll be interesting to see if they just decide to roll with these two guys as their primary tandem next year. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it, I played Jamison Crowder in cash games on DK. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. You talk to a real doctor who can prescribe you with real medication. It's simple, it's safe, it's totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if the medication is deemed to be appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. Just go to roman.com/bluewire to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's roman.com/bluewire for a free visit to get started. Get roman.com/bluewire. Now let's get into No Shit Shit now.
All right, first item, Terry McLaurin caught 4 of 7 targets for 57 yards and a touchdown in week 15 against the Packers.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no shit. Look, we know he's pretty talented. Like, he lit the world on fire, and he kind of disappeared. There seems to be a bit of an issue there in the quarterbacking room over in Washington. And again, it's really not maybe some of it's Haskins, maybe some of it's the offense. I don't know, but this has got all the smell of it of a dead team walking, right? So it's interesting to see McLaurin kind of get the work. I mean, he saw 7 targets today. That's only 1 fewer than Chris Thompson, who saw who got 7 of those for 43 yards. And another guy who was getting some love off late was Kevin Harmon. He was, kind of inefficient here, but he saw 4 targets and he caught 1. I don't know. I think if people are trying to buy Terry McLaurin low, That's kind of a fairy tale, right? Like, what would you have to give to get Terry McLaurin? It'd have to be a first, right?
At this point, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I unfortunately was not, you know, like a big fan of him, of his when he was as a prospect. So I own him in no dynasty teams. And yeah, a few of my teams are that wide receiver needy. But if I did have one that, and, you know, I was looking to acquire some breakout guys, McLaurin is definitely someone I would try to get, and I would possibly be willing to give up a late first for him. So yeah.
McLaurin's prospect profile, it's a good thing you bring that up, because that's one where the analytics guys are just, we're just going to miss. It's kind of similar to the Michael Thomas prospect profile, right? Like, he's old, like the lack of production. There's a lot more work to go on over there that really requires the kind of lift needed. And I heard, you know, just to figure out whether or not they're worth our time. And Ohio State guys in general are pretty difficult, because most of them seem to stay kind of late. Mm-hmm. They don't typically declare early. Their production's kind of muted relative to what we want to really look at. So I think that there's probably a different way for us to really approach draft eval for these guys. But, you know, from an analytics perspective, we are going to miss them. But it's like the one that I didn't see or hear most of the tape guys who I listen to or follow talk much about him. So I didn't think much of it until, like, he was drafted early by Washington. And he made it on a couple of my FFPC best ball rosters because they're so deep. But outside of that, I don't own him anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was fast, which is the one kind of thing you want to see for a small wide receiver, especially one who's not very productive. But there's just so many cases of fast guys without production getting overdrafted and being busts in the NFL. I mean, I guess third round or wherever Washington took him isn't too bad for that. But yeah, he had definitely the profile more of a bust. So yeah, unfortunately, I'm now trying to play catch up.
Ryan Tannehill completed 21 of 27 passes for 391 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception in the Titans' Week 14 win over the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, no shit, it is the Raiders, right? But Tannehill has kind of been doing this for a while now. I don't even know what to make of this. I mean, I don't think Tannehill is like some amazing quarterback talent, so... part of it is the Raiders. You're someone who was a Mariota truther long after it was cool. What do you make of Tannehill's performance?
Yeah, tough. Just how bad was he, I guess, is my question here. Like, this is like ridiculous, right? Like I'm seeing people who are coming out who used to be Trent Tannehill truthers who are trying to take a victory lap on this. And it's like, no, you don't get to do this now. Like 3 years after or 4 years after he was like deemed to be just not good.
Right.
I mean, he's playing fairly efficiently despite the lack of volume. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, he does not, like, he's putting up these ridiculous ceiling games on almost no passing. And Derrick Henry is still smashing. And that's also very impressive to me, if only because, again, like, he doesn't get all that much work in the passing game, but like Henry is a guy who just, when he gets to that second level, is just gone. Like, good luck. See you never. it's impressive, particularly because this is a team that hasn't been really forced to throw a lot. And they're currently, I believe, in the catbird seat. I don't know if I use that term right, but I wanted to use it because it's a fun thing to say. For locking up the division, it looks like they're tied with Houston right now for the division. Houston has just lost a bunch of games. Like, both teams are 8-5, and one of the teams has a point differential that indicates or suggests that they're gonna beat the pants off the other one. And let me tell you, it's not the team that has Deshaun Watson under center. So this is like, it's kind of exciting here because both teams play each other twice down the line, so that there's going to be massive playoff implications here for both teams, especially for next week's game. I know I went on a bit of a tangent there, but like, this Ryan Tannehill performance has been kind of exciting to watch, if only because I have a bunch of AJ Brown on my dynasty squads. I played him in one today, and I have him in a one of these deeper best ball dynasty rosters. So I'm excited and heartened by AJ Brown's progression. Do you think they sign Ryan Tannehill on a contract for a franchise contract next year, like 1 year deal?
I mean, if he keeps playing like this, kind of forces their hand, right? You can't, you can't play this efficiently, 391 yards and three touchdowns, and lead your team to wins, not at least get your team to think about a contract. I mean, I think probably that's the thing that is likely to mean the most for his staying power is the fact that, as you said, the Titans are winning and now on the verge of winning the division. So that's something I think not many people expected going into the season and even in the beginning of the season. So yeah, I'd expect him to be around next year. Is Mariota just done? He's out of the league, or he's like the new RG3 or something?
I have no idea what happens with Marcus Mariota, but I'd be interested to see where he lands in free agency, because I do think he will get a job as a backup. And as like this year has shown, there's plenty of turnover at the QB position. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a really brutal year compared to most years. But again, there's enough. If he lands on a team that has a soft starting quarterback issue, maybe he takes over or something, but I'm really not keeping hope alive for that. He's probably just toast. He's probably just not good. And that's just how it rolls, I guess. Sucks, but that's how it goes.
Justin Watson caught 5 of 8 targets for 59 yards and a touchdown in the Buccaneers' Week 14 win over the Colts.
Yeah, I guess this is no shit because we thought he was like a strong prospect and we thought he was pretty good. It's probably going to be a bit of a shit. No, from a long-term perspective, and just that Mike Evans had to leave early with like that injury to his hammy, and that's a bit of a brutal L to take there. So I don't know. I mean, it's exciting to see him make plays. He's probably going to keep making them. Was Scotty Miller placed on IR?
That I don't know.
I have to check, because that would be interesting, if only because Scotty Miller was also kind of coming on.
Right. Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, I love seeing Justin Watson get this work and look pretty good with it. I mean, Breshad Perriman had a decent game as well with 70 yards and a touchdown. So, he was a first-round pick, someone who has taken a long time to kind of find his place in the league, and still we're not quite sure. But, yeah, I'm afraid that for both these guys, Watson and Perriman, this is maybe just a 1 week thing. Assuming Evans isn't out for an extended period of time.
Well, yeah, but then also OJ Howard had a good day. He got 4 of his 5 targets for 73 yards, right? And that's what's going to happen when your QB passes the ball 45 times.
Yeah.
This was a high powered shootout. It was actually kind of exciting to see, and especially the come from behind victory here for like Tampa Bay was pretty good. So Scotty Miller, has a hamstring injury and he was out, but he's not on IR. Here's a fun one. Adare Ogunbowale continues to run as the receiving back. He caught 5 of his targets for 48 yards. He was also responsible for like a fumble that gave the Colts the ball back, and I think they scored a TD on it. On the bright side, Rojo saw 5 targets as well. My bigger question to you is why with Adare Ogunbowale, like he... clearly didn't get benched. Like, what is Arians' problem?
Who knows? I mean, I guess Ogunbowale doesn't miss blitz pickups, and who knows?
That's a lie because I saw him miss one, like, way back, like, in one of the early weeks. So it's just like, what's going on?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's, you like to see kind of not exactly a big game from Ronald Jones, but at least a game where he's more involved, sort of the most involved running back. But I mean, I don't think this is what we had in mind when we were expecting a Ronald Jones breakout this year.
DeAndre Washington rushed 14 times for 53 yards and a touchdown in the Raiders' Week 14 loss to the Titans. He also caught 6, he added 6 for 43 as a receiver.
Yeah, so to me, this is a shit note because Obviously, most of those targets should have gone to Jalen Richard with Josh Jacobs out. I mean, yeah, it's weird. They haven't targeted running backs all that much when Jacobs was in the game, and as soon as he misses, instead of giving, you know, targeting Richard a bunch, they give him to DeAndre Washington, which is frustrating for all my Jalen Richard best ball shares. But yeah, I mean, Washington looked decent. We knew he would probably get an increase in opportunity, maybe not quite to this level with Jacobs out, but yeah, I guess as long as Jacobs is missing time, Washington appears to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a bummer, right, for like Jalen Richard. I wonder how much of this is because of his anti-vaccination stance. I'm just kidding.
Tre'Quan Smith caught 2 of 4 targets for 29 yards and 1 touchdown in the Saints' Week 14 loss to the 49ers.
Yeah, shit, no, man. Who cares? This guy's not happening. Like, what? He saw like 4 targets. He's behind Tedkin Jr. on the receiving totem pole, and like realistically, Jared Cook was in line for a very big day until he got hurt.
Oh man, this is depressing to hear. But I mean, yeah. I guess you're kind of right. I mean, Tre'Quan was hurt a lot of the year, so maybe he's still dealing with something. But he definitely has not been as involved as I thought he would be this season, or hoped he would be.
Yeah, so, no, yeah, I don't know. I really can't see much hope. Like for him, like, does he doesn't really fit the profile of a year 3 breakout, does he?
Well, yeah, that's tricky. I can't remember actually where he was drafted, but I think it was probably, well, I mean, year 3 is kind of a crossover year where you see some early drafted guys kind of coming on late, having success, but then you also start to see the later round guys who have been able to stick around sort of pick up steam. So I definitely don't think a year 3 breakout is out of the question for Tre'Quan. I mean, that's kind of, he's kind of following in Chris Godwin's mold in that sense, although Godwin had a much better second year than Tre'Quan is having right now. So he's kind of disadvantaged from that perspective, but I don't think a year 3 breakout is impossible. But yeah, if it doesn't happen in year 3, I mean, definitely year 3 breakouts are a lot less likely than year 2. And if it doesn't happen in year 3, then you definitely want to be getting him off your team if he is still on them.
Alexander Mattison chipped in with 46 yards and 14 carries while also pulling in 2 catches for 18 yards and 2 targets Sunday in the Vikings' Week 14 win over the Lions.
Yeah, this is a no shit. I mean, Mattison is good. One of the best handcuffs definitely in the league, and in a game that the Vikings won pretty easily over the Lions, I think it makes sense that they give him a little extra run, even with Cook also having a pretty good game. So I think this is really encouraging. And if you, you know, we saw last week that when Cook goes down, Madison gets pretty much, you know, all of the running back work. So I think he's somebody worth holding during your playoff run just in case. And he's definitely somebody to probably draft fairly highly next year. Patrick Laird rushed 15 times for 48 yards in the Dolphins' Week 14 loss to the Jets, adding 4 receptions for 38 additional yards.
No shit. I mean, after that interview on the Takecast with Davis Maddock and Peter Overzet, like, did you think he was going to do anything else?
Well, I thought he was going to score a touchdown and do a cake-eating celebration, but, you know, we'll have to wait 1 week for that, I guess.
Yeah, we'll wait for him to do it against the Patriots while Pete is there in his... Exactly. Patrick Laird jersey at a Patriots game.
Yeah. Here's a question. Curtis Patrick just had an article on RotoViz come out kind of looking at playing waivers at the end of the season in Dynasty, and he was focusing on these two guys, Laird and Myles Gaskin, both Dolphins running backs. and sort of making the case that even though Laird is the one who's getting more of the touches right now and is sort of the hot commodity at the moment, Gaskin actually has a much more attractive profile. I'm wondering if what your thoughts are on how you would sort of rate these guys in terms of dynasty pickups, you know, late season dynasty ads, end of roster guys to stash.
I mean, wasn't that the case like before the Patrick Laird stuff? Like like everybody at RotoViz was on Myles Gaskin, and you were the only one on Patrick Laird. And haven't we been given signals from the team here that they think Patrick Laird is superior to Myles Gaskin? So, yeah. that's my only counter here is that like we started the season and most of the season with Myles Gaskin over Patrick Laird on the depth chart as the assumption, and it turns out it's not the way the team sees it. And I don't know. I just wanted to put that back in your court. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm obviously biased on this, but I mean, I think it's probably not insignificant that Laird plays on special teams already, and Gaskin really doesn't. So that gives him a lot more value to the team just in general. But I mean, Gaskin definitely has the profile. You know, he was an impressive college producer as well. 4,000 yard seasons at Washington.
He was tremendous. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I mean, it's you know, it's kind of unfortunate that both these guys that I liked ended up on the Dolphins, because really it's going to be hard for them both to emerge in that way. They both look a little bit like Philip Lindsay in a lot of ways. I'm a little bit torn, you know, but there's my guy, backfield dominator, leader in this class. So and obviously the Dolphins are showing that they sort of trust him a little bit more to handle the work at this point. So yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. Maybe Gaskin is the sort of player who can get a little bit, if he gets a little bit more time in the offense or something, we can see him have sort of a breakout next season, or maybe he'll get worked more into the offense as the season goes along with only really these two running backs on the team. Or I guess they signed Zach Zenner, didn't they? So yeah, it'll be interesting, but yeah, I'm definitely a Laird guy, obviously. So, but yeah, I just wanted to hear your take on that.
No, again, it's a bit of a bummer to like really pit these two, because when you hear Patrick Laird talk on the take cast, he mentions how they're like good friends. But I'm going back to some of my rookie drafts from like earlier this offseason, and Myles Gaskin was drafted in them. Whether he was drafted and dropped is irrelevant, because again, everyone knew that he has a phenomenal prospect profile. All we've seen here is the team telling us that they don't think that Gaskin has the same kind of skill set as they want out of Laird. And that can be seen from their touch distribution. It'll be interesting to see. Laird carried the ball 15 times today for 48 yards. And he had, five targets, and he caught four of those for 38 yards, which again is like phenomenal for like a guy who he was really not on anyone's radars for the longest of times until Pete's massive push. I mean, when you go back to the signal that we've been giving here from the team, it's just they prefer Laird, and it's very difficult to go back to like the prospect profile stuff, because again, this is someone who was drafted, especially in deeper dynasty leagues. So if you dropped him and now you're going to run to go back and pick him up, sure. The running back position is fairly fragile, but I really can't see, a situation where they're both on waivers that you're going to be taking Gaskin over Laird at any point. Like if you're like at this point, like if they're on waivers, like I would much rather just try and get Laird, because he's getting the backfield belongs to him right now for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, for sure. At some point you got to let new information sort of count for more than your priors.
Yeah, like I think this is just one of those situations. And again, Gaskin has all that stuff going for him, and he makes for a fine stash. But if you're playing in a league where your roster depth is to where both of these guys are on waivers, neither of them are going to make it past the offseason for you, because you're just going to be churning them away and they'll be on waivers again next time. So you need to get the guy who's getting the points now. Paris Campbell got 3 of 5 targets for 12 yards in the Colts' week 14 loss to the Buccaneers.
This is a shit no. I mean, you're playing the Buccaneers. There's no T.Y. Hilton. 3 for 5 targets for 12 yards. I mean, come on, Paris Campbell. Be better.
Yeah, this was the Marcus Johnson game and Zach Pascal. you know, we were just talking a little bit about like updating our priors. Is that something to do over here? Like, how are we going forward with this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I was a lot lower on Paris Campbell coming out than a lot of other people in the industry were, and even other people at RotoViz. So I don't think this, I mean, this doesn't really change my outlook on him. I wasn't necessarily expecting big things in his rookie year. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird to see Marcus Johnson kind of getting so much work when they just spend so much draft capital on Paris Campbell. But, yeah, it's hard to know what to make of it. I mean, what was your take on Campbell as a prospect? I don't quite remember.
Possibly a bigger, faster Curtis Samuel, which at this point probably is just not a good thing.
Yeah, you're not a Curtis Samuel fan either, so.
I am actually a Curtis Samuel fan. It's just so much that the offseason has did an absolute number on my brain. Like, it's very difficult to say whose fault it is. It might just be mine at this point. But like, I don't know if I can like take the fallacious like where you're comparing, you know, two similar-ish but not really players, and then you're trying to find a reason to compare the two, and like the only way to do it is by denigrating the other. I don't know. I mean, like, I had a handful of like conversations about Curtis Samuel versus DJ Moore, and like the argument was always, well, they should be drafted closer together. And like, when you're not, you know, like, and it's like, well, that sounds not like a wise idea. Yeah. I think that the gap exists, and for a reason, and it's, you know, back in the preseason, it's not like Cam is able to sustain really. I know that was your bold take, which is what made it bold, but really you wanted the primary in this receiver core, and because right. When you account for like how much Christian McCaffrey was going to take, it doesn't leave a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Curtis Samuel should have been drafted higher all offseason, but I also thought DJ Moore should have been drafted higher all offseason, so not necessarily that the gap should be closer, but just that they were both being undervalued.
Right. Yeah, and that's a different discussion to have over here. So again, this is not me necessarily denigrating like Curtis Samuel as a prospect. He's been pretty good. It's just relative to what he was being doubted as is different. And it's also weird to see Campbell not get, I don't know, like the lack of creativity on from the Colts' side. Like, I thought that they'd be using him slightly more creatively, right? Like, you think that they'd be using him more in like rushing attempts and jet sweeps and a handful of other items, but I can't tell if it's like because his like season has been injury marred or what. Like, maybe he's still adjusting to the NFL. So I think that there's still hope here for Campbell, but it's always you know, kind of difficult. I mean, he's only had like the 4 rushing attempts. It looks like all season. Yeah, no. If they're going to be using him as like a traditional-ish wide receiver, I guess I kind of got no real interest in him next season. If his ADP is like pretty aggressive in best ball, like, and I've got really no interest in trading for him in Dynasty, I don't think.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think this is a situation where, you know, if you're still holding on to T.Y. Hilton in Dynasty, you want to try to get out as fast as you can. And that means probably somebody in this receiver core, unless they draft someone this year, is going to be taking a step forward next season. I mean, right now, maybe that looks like Zach Pascal, but it could be Campbell too. So he's a little intriguing from that perspective, only because I'm thinking that it's about that time when Hilton is going to be replaced as the wide receiver one in this offense. Well, speaking of Curtis Samuel and the Panthers, Ian Thomas caught 5 of 10 targets for 57 yards and 1 touchdown in the Panthers' Week 14 loss to the Falcons.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, this is a guy who got fed, like, and he did fairly well when Greg Olsen was out around this time last year, and he's, you know, setting up to do that yet again. And it looks like he was fed targets at the expense of one, like, Curtis Samuel here. So I just want to double check to make sure that I'm right when I say that. But yeah, it looks like he had 10 targets and Curtis Samuel had 4. So, you know, look, I think Ian Thomas is a pretty good get. And I think that that is something to look for. Like, I know that he's someone who is probably on, but not really on waivers anymore. But like, I think he's going to be someone that we should be considering next year in best ball, if only because there should be no more Olsen, right? Like, where would you draft him, out of curiosity there?
Yeah, I like Thomas. I mean, if you're talking about dynasty, I think early double-digit rounds, definitely I would consider him there, maybe even possibly earlier. You know, I was, maybe that's a little too aggressive, but I was taking a lot of Thomas this year and even last year, kind of expecting Greg Olsen to be going away, and he didn't really until now. But I mean, you definitely love to see this sort of line if you are an Ian Thomas owner. So I'm bullish on Thomas going forward for sure.
Nice. Speaking of other breakout potential tight ends, Hayden Hurst got 3 of 3 targets for 71 yards and a touchdown in the Ravens' Week 14 win over the Bills.
Yeah. Mark Andrews left this game pretty early on with some sort of leg injury. I can't exactly remember what. And it was, you know, Hurst had these 71 yards. I think Nick Boyle also caught a touchdown. So, yeah, if you're a Ravens tight end, it's, you know, a good time to, you know, good time of the year for you. But I don't think that we can rely on this sort of production from Hurst unless it turns out Mark Andrews is going to miss a few games. But yeah, definitely an encouraging performance. I know Hurst is someone that you were kind of encouraging us to get at the end of our FBG team. And he might have made it onto our team for a couple of weeks, but I don't know if he ever started any games for us. But yeah, are you liking Hurst's outlook in dynasty in this offense, or do you think it's going to still be the Mark Andrews show going forward?
Probably the Mark Andrews show going forward. I mean, I think that this whole thing only came about because, you know, they're like, Mark Andrews seems to be hobbled. Like, I've got really no interest in like drafting Hurst all that much. Like, he's probably someone who it's fine to get, I guess, a sprinkle of later in drafts at some point. The price has to be right though. But, yeah. Not really interested in him, if only because his targets come by like fairly late. I mean, and speaking of, our FPG team, Nick O'Leary went off for 30 yards.
Of course.
And a TD. Yeah, of course he did. But that's just, I mean, I guess that's just fun. But I don't know, man. As far as Hayden Hurst goes, like, it's a bit of a bummer because, just how much draft capital this meant. And again, it just shows you that the how inefficient the draft really is, like, or how difficult the draft is.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, I think you're right that Hurst is still someone to keep an eye on and probably to get at the end of drafts. I mean, if only because, you know, he's shown today and in other games that he can be pretty efficient and can be a quality target. And, you know, actually do stuff. And we know tight end is a pretty fragile position. So he's someone who's going to probably be relevant some weeks for the foreseeable future. But yeah, definitely doesn't look like the best pick at this point, even if that was maybe the Ravens' best draft in a long time. Devontae Freeman rushed 17 times for 84 yards and 1 touchdown in the Falcons' Week 14 win over the Panthers.
Yeah, this is going to be a shit no for me. I mean, like, Freeman's been fine or whatever, but like, this is a Panthers' rush defense that was smashed last week by Darius Geis, and the Rotoviz strength of schedule tool had them as the like the softest matchup for running backs. So it's why I was really into Devontae Freeman. What's really interesting is I got to double check how many targets he got, but my question to you is, do you think they started throwing to him more because of that Calvin Ridley injury, or like maybe just because they were up so big? But also, you know, Brian Hill did fairly well. He had 9 carries for 62 yards and a TD. So I guess my question to you really is, like, do you think that this is like a resurgent Devonta Freeman, or just they're just more like whatever, we were blowing them out, so like let's put in like the backups?
I think it's more the latter. I think it's more facing Carolina and being able to move the ball on the ground against them, and you know, being ahead by or winning by 20 points and getting Brian Hill involved. Yeah, I mean, we also saw a touchdown from something called an Olamide Zaccheaus. So I don't know what that is, but he scored a touchdown. So it's kind of, that's the kind of game it was.
At least it's not that other guy who I can't remember whose name is, who is getting work on Thanksgiving.
That's right. They have so many guys who come out of nowhere, have a good game. It was Russell Gage for a while. Now he's apparently...
It's Christian Blake. That's his name.
That's right, Christian Blake.
Yeah. Just dudes, man. They just got these, like,
so
dudes
who
week,
I... next week, whoever is the other guy that we haven't yet heard of on Atlanta, he'll have 100 yards and a touchdown. And then maybe someday it'll be the Calvin Ridley show again.
Hey, Brandon Bowell is here. Maybe. Maybe him.
Hey.
Maybe him.
Maybe.
David Johnson rushed 3 times for 19 yards and caught both of his targets for 34 yards in a receiving touchdown in Arizona's Week 14 loss to the Steelers.
Yeah. I don't even really want to talk about this game, but let me turn it back around to you. What would you accept in Dynasty to trade away David Johnson?
Tough question. I don't know. I'd need... I don't know, man. Call me a donk or whatever, but like his upside is so tantalizing. And if he's, I mean, clearly he's playing hurt, like, or at least that's my opinion or like my perception. So I really let the market broadly dictate that price. Like if his like ADP next year is still in like the top, I don't know, 36, I would assume that I would need like an early first plus to get him. For like ADP redraft, like just because like that would show, especially if they don't like resign Kenyon Drake, because like DJ's best skill is receiving, and it's just difficult to find guys with his kind of like skill set and size speed combo.
Yeah.
That said, he's a guy I'm just gonna hold until his value completely declines to zero, because again, running backs, I really don't care. Like I rarely overdraft these guys, and I can make it work somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what it would be possible to get if you were trying to shop him at this point, but I'm kind of looking at him as a running back who hasn't been good in 3 years now. He's been hurt a lot, which we know from some research is actually not necessarily a good signal in terms of bounce back probability, at least at wide receiver, but it's probably pretty similar at running back too. And he's kind of older than you would think given when he came into the league. So a running back who's older than his peers, who's been hurt a lot, who hasn't had a really efficient season. I mean, it sounds like somebody that I want to try to get off my team and get something for if I can. And I mean, if I can get a first in the 2020 class, which looks to be a really strong running back class, then that's pretty attractive to me, even if the first is pretty late. So,
not getting the first. I guarantee that people who are looking to buy will give at most a late second, like
second.
The 210.
Wow.
Yeah, I guarantee that people are looking to buy opportunistically. I really cannot see someone, because like again, like we've talked about a little bit about like how hype this like class is. It's like pulling teeth, dude. Like it's like pulling teeth trying to acquire. Like I'm sure if you offer someone Calvin Ridley for like a mid first, they would say that they're not getting enough back. and I will guarantee that there are people out there who believe that earnestly.
It's just the
hype that this rookie class has come in with is ridiculous, and it's going to retain that hype for a very long time, I think, just because everyone is convinced that this is like the running back class that will save your rosters or whatever. And like, you know, we were kind of poo-pooed on the 2019 rookie class, and we were talking a little bit about this in the road of his Slack. But the wide receivers have been very good.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it's interesting.
Right. I guess I'm hoping that Johnson still has some name value that, you know, if you offer him for somebody's mid first, they're going to think they're getting an elite talent at a discount because he's been playing hurt, maybe. And, you know, like you said, he does have that upside he's shown. I think the question is whether he's still capable of that sort of season, or whether he's still got that sort of season in his future and not only, you know, almost 4 years ago now.
I think it'll have to be during the actual rookie draft. I think that's where you're going to have to make that move, because mm-hmm. when people are not just hypothesizing on their picks and they can actually see what the draft board looks like for them, I think that's where you have to swoop in.
It's a good idea. All right, before we move on to the final segment, I want to remind you to become a RotoViz Patreon and gain exclusive access to RotoViz Radio Slack, where you can ask questions and gain league-winning advice from many of the podcast and writing team. Patronships start at just $6 per month. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today to join an exclusive community of listeners. Sign up at patreon.com/RotoVizRadio. I also want to remind you that you can get a listeners only 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our premium NFL content and tools, and it supports the pod. Plus, for a limited time only, we're offering a 2-year RV Radio NFL sub, which includes a 10% discount and complimentary access to RotoViz Radio Patreon and the RotoViz Radio Slack channel for the 2019 season. And, you know, into the off season, we're going to keep that going. So yeah, get 10% off a 2-year subscription and you get unlimited access to the RotoViz Radio Slack channel. All you have to do is head to rotoviz.com/podcast, sign up via the 2-year RV Radio subscription, and we'll email you Slack access details within 48 hours. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast. All right, moving on to news item number 3. Deontay Johnson caught 6 of 8 targets for 60 yards and a touchdown in the Steelers' Week 14 win over the Cardinals. Given the Steelers' current quarterback play, Johnson has quietly had a pretty positive rookie season. So what are your expectations for Johnson and the rest of the Steelers receivers for the remainder of this season and beyond?
Yeah, I'm not so sure what to make of the actual current play, right? Like it's difficult to tell because this is a team that is more interesting in winning by the skin of the teeth than actually, you know, getting into shootouts. Like Hodges only threw the ball 19 times. They ran the ball 35 times. That's crazy. I mean, like that's a ridiculous pass run split. Like Carrots White got some run. Benny Snell got some run. Deontay Johnson had a carry. Jalen Samuels got a handful of carries. Jalen Samuels confirmed trending towards dust, probably confirmed dust, if we're being honest here. This is a team that has. It'll be interesting to see what happens when they force in a negative script. And I don't think they really are going to be. I think they're really just trying and praying to make the playoffs and just get bounced in the first round, because they did trade away their first rounder to Miami for Minkah Fitzpatrick. They now have a 2-game gap over the Browns, and they host the Bills next week. Then they play for New York, and then they're probably going to get smashed by the Ravens in week 17. That's probably going to be dead anyway, but if they both have made the playoffs. So I'm probably going to throw this back to you and talk about this for next year, because we were talking again about this in the RotoViz Slack, and it was brought up because John Lipinski mentioned that he's going to have a lot of Deontay next year. Does Deontay Johnson fit the profile of a breakout wide receiver in the second year?
I think so. I'd have to look more carefully into it after this game, but I mean, he was, you know, a surprise kind of third round pick. He did declare early. So that's all stuff we like, and he's having a pretty good rookie season. So I think he's a really good, second year breakout candidate. I mean, part of the problem, we kind of talked about this in the Slack channel, is that there are just so many really intriguing second-year breakout candidates in this current rookie class, and obviously they can't all break out. So you either have to, I don't know, get exposure to all of them, or kind of take a stance somewhere. If I'm taking stances, I don't know that Deontay Johnson would be really near the top of my list, and maybe I only say that because I'm expecting Juju to come back and have kind of a bounce back season. I mean, I think, you know, as good as Hodges has been, assuming Roethlisberger doesn't retire, I would assume they'd go back to him and we would see more of the Roethlisberger Juju connection in 2020. So, I'm not positive that between Juju and James Washington that Deontay Johnson has the path to the sort of work you want to see for a second year breakout, but I'm definitely optimistic about his future. It's just more a matter of kind of picking your spots with these second year breakouts, since there are so many guys that I think make for really intriguing options. I guess, yeah, to kind of send it back to you, if you were going to redo the sort of the rookie drafts now, or redo your rookie wide receiver rankings, where would you put Johnson? Would he be in like your top five, top 10?
Maybe not that high. I'm going to have to quickly refresh myself here a little bit on the Dynasty Rookie ADP, because this is actually a pretty fun exercise, if only because we're heading into that time of the year. Thanks to Mike Beers for this tremendous app suite. I mean, it's amazing the kind of like narrative stories you can tell yourself when you're not really looking at the hard data, right? Like,
let me ask it a different way. Would you have, let me pull this up.
I'm looking at it right now. So, you know, looking at the rookie draft ADP, you had, let's see where Deontay went, I believe. Oh, man, he went fairly late by the looks of it. So it looks like Deontay Johnson went at the 212, and this is in one QB leagues, and he went behind. And here's going to be a lot of fun. Hakeem Butler,
right?
Devin Singletary, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Andy Isabella, Damian Harris, Justice Hill, Irv Smith, Alexander Mattison. I want literally probably none of those guys. Like, just like maybe J-Jaw, but like, and maybe Singletary.
I
have no interest in most of those guys, like all those like running backs are just bleh, who cares?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely like Singletary and would probably rank him ahead of Deontay Johnson.
Yes.
There are a couple guys who are kind of interesting who maybe weren't getting as much buzz at this time last year, but like Deebo Samuel is someone who has looked pretty good in San Francisco. Where would you have him in relation to Deontay?
Probably, I mean, I have him higher, like without a doubt. Like I'm still expecting that our guy Juju is going to be the guy for Pittsburgh next year. I mean, when you're looking at this, and I'm looking at the MFL ADP, not the FFPC ADP, like both TJ Hawkinson, like, I mean, TJ Hawkinson at 106 is ridiculous for him, for just a tight end going that high. I would probably rank all, like a lot of these wide receivers ahead of him there. Noah Fant went ahead of all of them. I'd probably take Deebo, Mecole, Marquise Brown, Devin Singletary, and Deontay ahead of those guys comfortably, like not an issue for me. I'd also put McLaurin up there. McLaurin actually went later. Like McLaurin went after Kelvin Harmon.
Yeah.
So here's, and that puts him, I guess, by the looks of it, middle of the third round. He went after Miles Boykin. So just no interest in him either. I have no interest in Jay Sternberger or Kelvin Harmon or any of these guys were listed ahead of Terry McLaurin. Benny Snell went far too late. Where would you rank him out of curiosity now?
Deontay?
No, Benny Snell and Deontay, where would you take them?
Oh, Ben, those two guys. I mean, I would probably have Deontay higher than Snell at this point. But yeah, that's tricky. I think Snell has looked pretty good. I've been pretty impressed with, I mean, not only how much work they've been giving him in the rushing game with Connor out, but I mean, he hasn't been bad, and he was someone who I was always higher on than a lot of other people were. So I kind of feel like I have to still sort of represent for Benny Snell. But yeah, that's tricky. I mean, I wouldn't want to move Snell up above of a lot of the other rookie running backs who I liked better coming out and who haven't necessarily had the same opportunity he has. Like, I think rather have Justice Hill I still would probably rather have Daryl Henderson. So, yeah, that's tricky.
I mean, I think some of this is just kind of damning from the wide receiver perspective. Like, just like, would you? Okay, let's reframe the question. Let's go back to Paris Campbell, right? Where would you rank him in relation to Deebo Samuel, Mecole Hardman, Marquise Brown, and Deontay and Terry McLaurin? Like, I'd take all those guys ahead of him. So, just curious where you would put him.
You'd take all those guys ahead of Paris Campbell?
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat. Like, I would probably just not consider like Paris Campbell at all. Like, I thought he was kind of a little overdrafted at the time.
Yeah.
And like he's just basically like a version of Mecole Hardman who failed to fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to do. Like, so like these are guys, like I would consider all of them ahead of Paris Campbell, which probably pushes Campbell down to like the late second, early third.
Yeah, I probably would too. I mean, I wasn't drafting Campbell before and nothing he's really, or I wasn't drafting him in rookie drafts and nothing he's really done so far this season has given me a reason to think that he should be moved up. I mean, Deebo Samuel was kind of in the same boat for me as Paris Campbell, as somebody that a lot of people liked and I was never really on board, but he has actually had a pretty good rookie season, so he's someone I've had to sort of adjust my take on and would be moving him way up. But Campbell, I don't think has really done anything to change my mind yet, but we'll see. I mean, especially he had the opportunity in this last game and didn't do anything with it, so yeah, I'm still not that interested in Campbell, so I think I would agree with you.
Well, I mean, just to bring it back to our prospect eval stuff, like we kind of went back and forth on Deebo. Like I mentioned to you that he came so close to breaking out as a sophomore
mm-hmm.
that we should have just counted him as a sophomore breakout. Like I think that when you're like, you know, that close to the threshold, you're probably better off
right.
presenting them as an actual breakout, because like the actual raw number perspective doesn't really matter. Like you don't have to hit our threshold. Like just being in the ballpark, I think, makes you a contender for being good. Because with Deebo's prospect profile, like he suffered a broken leg in his junior year and it forced him to come back for his senior year. I was convinced that he was going to declare early.
Yeah.
Had he not gotten hurt. So he, you know, so from a, depending on how you looked at the numbers, like the raw numbers, like you could have said, well, this was a sophomore breakout, or you could say he stayed for his senior year. Like it was very subjective, which is where I think it gets a little tricky with a guy like Deebo, right? But
right.
it was all baked into his draft capital and where he was drafted in rookie draft. So
right. That's a good point. And it's something that we kind of have seen with the, I mean, even this year, you know, both say DK Metcalf and AJ Brown were kind of didn't have the best market share numbers, and I think especially with Metcalf, that probably moved him down some people's boards. You can say the same with like Landry and Beckham, and I guess Samuel is playing with Bryan Edwards a lot of the time, who also a lot of people are really excited about, but also didn't have, you know, a true breakout season and has never really reached, until maybe this season, never reached the market share numbers we're looking for. But I mean, I think in cases like that, these guys who don't have the numbers are actually maybe a little bit better than we think, or than the numbers say. So yeah, that's an interesting point on Deebo. It's definitely worth taking that sort of context and the injury context into account.
This is all laid out in the profile that we did write, though, so that's good. People can go back and take a look at it, because it was a fairly lengthy one. Because
yeah,
of, you know, just how do we approach. I mean, DK Metcalf was just a non-starter at 105 for me, I think. I took him at, like, 109 in one league, but, like, at 105, like ahead of AJ Brown, that's just a non-starter. Like, mm-hmm. AJ Brown is, like, leaps and bounds, clearly the superior player.
Yeah, you like, still prefer like, AJ Brown.
Oh yeah, leaps and bounds. Like it's just not even a contest. I mean, like people can say it is, but I if you say it is, like I'm just gonna tune you out, because there's just, you have nothing. Like I don't know how you can justify that at this point. Like from a prospect profile perspective, and also from the actual NFL like production perspective. Like I can't see how you're squaring that circle. And frankly, I don't want to know how you're squaring that circle. Like, I just don't think that you're that is worth my time to learn what mental gymnastics you needed to do to get you to still believe that DK Metcalf is a superior to AJ Brown. Like, I just don't care.
I mean, have you seen his muscles though?
Yeah, I do. I see them as they as he fails to corral in these like
as he drops
lasers
right?
from. Yeah, that's just where I see him. It's pretty marvelous. It's like what if a Greek god was dropping touchdowns from Russell Wilson? This is what we get. And that's not to say I don't like DK Metcalf. I just think that again, this is a situation where people got way too emotional, and even I sound emotional right now. But they wanted DK Metcalf to really be this guy who was. The reason that AJ Brown was not good, like it was like a very binary take to where I saw film rankers rank the third wheel in that offense, who I forget what his name is now,
DeMarcus Lodge.
Yeah, him. They were ranking him ahead of AJ Brown. So it's just like, what are you doing? Like that's just like that is like the pinnacle of draft. Twitter right there is just where like you just want your point to be so much bigger, so you just take the absolute dumbest route to make your point.
Yeah, we've rambled on this a long time, but it's an interesting conversation. So I want to ask where you would have Metcalf now in relation to N'Keal Harry.
Man, that's a tough one. I really think if we're gonna have to bump N'Keal Harry down, like he just doesn't, like it's not like, so I know N'Keal Harry has suffered from injuries and he hasn't seen enough playing time with Brady especially, but at the same time he's not like, he's made a handful of plays, but he's not really made, like he made that one really ridiculously good catch in the rain, but he didn't really do much in a few weeks ago, and he's really kind of been more of a rotational guy, which either speaks to his lack of development in the NFL or speaks to his lack of chemistry with Brady. I would be, if I had to redraft all these guys, I would be considering Harry at the back of most of them. I do still believe Harry is a good wide receiver, but I genuinely cannot see like an argument to where I need to be taking Harry like right now. Like he'd unfortunately have to slide behind a lot of these guys who we've seen some NFL brilliance from. And again, at the same time, there's guys on this list that are, in my opinion, going to be remain perennially undervalued. I do, and Harry, I do not think that he's a guy who you're going to be able to just pry away. As someone who, drafted Harry fairly high, he's someone who I am going to want that like max dollar to actually trade him. And so it's really, in my opinion, it's not really worth your time trying to figure out a way to steal Harry. If you really are a believer in him, you're going to have to just pay up and then hope you're right, which is not something that I typically tend to do. What about yourself?
Yeah, that's tough. I agree with that. I mean, I'm holding on to him wherever I own him, and I'm not aggressively trying to target him necessarily, although he's definitely the sort of player who could kind of, I mean, it wouldn't really be coming out of nowhere like DJ Chark did this season, but just sort of a guy that we forget about after a poor rookie season, even though he has the draft capital and a lot of good aspects to his profile to make him attractive. So, I mean, he's not going to be flying under the radar, so he's not going to be really cheap to acquire. But I think there's an argument to be made for trying to get him at a discount after this really kind of bad rookie season.
Yeah, and that's where it gets tough, right? Like if you're dealing with someone who, like I purposely drafted him on teams that I'm fairly solid at running back ahead of all the other guys.
Yeah.
You know, like no one was, and this is like, you know, where a lot of people are quick to say, well, just trade down. Well, yeah, it's impossible to trade down in these drafts if no one's letting you trade down.
Yeah.
There's a very different story there. Like if if everybody in your draft is equally sharp and they're just like, no, you just have to make a decision now. Like, we're forcing you to take the gun to your head. Like, it's just not, you just have to swallow it. Then that's just how it goes. And so I was trying to trade down. I figured I could still get Harry, but no one was letting me trade down. So I took Harry where I took him. So, and honestly, no regrets, because I'm still fairly optimistic on his outlook going forward. So, you know, I'd love it for him to have a DJ Chark-esque breakout.
Yeah.
Yeah, Austin Eckler rushed 8 times for 101 yards in the Chargers' Week 14 win over the Jaguars, and he added 4 receptions for 112 additional yards and a touchdown. You know, I mean, Eckler was brilliant for this afternoon. He ripped off 27, 23, and 35-yard runs in his first 3 carries, and he took a screen pass for 84 yards to the house after he lined up as a wide receiver. You know, what are your expectations for this Melgo-Eckler split going forward? And, like, you know, what are your, you know, does this have any dynasty implications for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eckler has been the better pass catcher in this backfield the whole season. I mean, is it possible he's just been the better running back? Yeah, I don't know. Is he going to potentially marginalize Melgo if Gordon, you know, well, I mean, yeah, there are questions, I think, about whether Gordon is even going to be a Charger next season. So, yeah, this definitely has implications. I'm a big Eckler fan, and unfortunately, you know, don't own him in enough dynasty leagues, and now he's going to be really, really hard to acquire. But I think that you could probably try and make offers for someone who thinks they're selling high after this game and this season. You know, someone thinking that Gordon is still the back to own there. I mean, I'm not sure that's true. The way we've seen this sort of split out, Eckler's getting the more valuable work from a fantasy perspective and has been just incredibly efficient with it. So, yeah. I mean, if you're asking, like, in Dynasty, would I draft Eckler ahead of Melvin Gordon? Maybe, yeah.
I just want to push back because, like, you know, Melvin Gordon also had 5 targets. I think the difference is, like, I think this is more of a, you can see that Eckler is more of the Lightning to, like, Melvin Gordon's Thunder, which is kind of, you know, a poor way to put it. but, like, you know, Melgo also catches the ball. Like, he had 5 targets and he caught 5 of them. And we've seen Melgo rip off, like, long runs as well, right? Like this was just an afternoon where Eckler was the more efficient back to own. He was, I mean, people are forgetting, but, like, earlier this offseason, I mean, it's earlier this in-season, like, he was not all that great as, you know, between the tackles, which is fine. But, you know, he really is electric when you're targeting him in the receiving game. So I just going to, you know, throw this out there. Like, do you think that the Chargers, like, they're probably able to sign Melvin Gordon to a longer term contract now that given his play, they'd probably be able to get him cheaper than where they thought they would have last offseason, and they just sign him up, like, for longer?
Oh, I doubt it. I mean, there are enough teams that think that they really need a running back like that, or probably think that Melvin Gordon could, you know, be the piece that pushes them over the edge. I think he's gonna get a big offer from another team this offseason. So
I kind of doubt that, man. Like, I just think that there's just no team that's going to be like, yeah, Melvin Gordon. Like, I just cannot see a team being like, Melvin Gordon was the reason they won. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, NFL teams do a lot of irrational things. So
yeah, we never know. But so do dynasty owners, because we were trying to trade away Austin Eckler at the start of the season when Melvin Gordon didn't return, and we wanted Christian Kirk in exchange. I think you remember that. We were told that the values are not even close.
Yeah.
And then we tried again that exact same trade, especially after Eckler was smashing.
Yeah.
And we were also told not even close.
Yeah. What do you think now, buddy?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Do we make the same offer again? Or are you a little bit off of Christian Kirk?
Yeah, I'm not off of Christian Kirk, but now I think we could get a lot more for Eckler.
I think so, too. Yeah. I do think so. I am also coming around to the fact that maybe Christian Kirk might be. It'll be interesting to see who the Arizona Cardinals target in the draft or will target via free agency to bring in.
Yeah,
because I think that's a different, you know, topic for a different day, because we have rambled on a lot, but I'm down to talk if you are.
Yeah, that I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm still definitely a Kirk fan. I mean, obviously this Arizona offense is going through. There was bound to be sort of a transitional period with a new quarterback and a new head coach. So I think maybe, you know, year two, you see Kyler take a big step forward. You maybe see them get more comfortable running this offense with Kingsbury. So I can see Christian Kirk having a really huge 2020 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just like you, I'm very optimistic about it. I'm hopeful here, but I think as far as Eckler goes, like, I don't know if you want to try shopping him this offseason or what, but like, what would you be looking for in exchange for him? Yeah, it's a tough one. I really think that you're better off just holding, because I don't think people are ever going to be giving you back in exchange the kind of value that you'll get from just holding and playing Eckler.
Yeah, especially if I'm being honest, Eckler is the sort of running back who, you know, he has this kind of breakout season. I think he's gonna end the season as the running back. Well, so far he's on pace to end as the running back 3, right? I don't know. Could you trade him for an early first plus?
Definitely not. No, man. Like, I'm telling you right now, the way people are talking about this upcoming rookie class is that these are all the running backs they're declaring are going to be Saquon Barkley. Like, there's absolutely no, like, we're going to soon get into the prospect eval phase, but I'm telling you right now, like we're at a precipice where every wide receiver is Julio Jones 2.0 and every running back is Saquon Barkley. And this is like, goes beyond the pale for like what we've seen in historical rookie draft classes past.
Yeah.
So just, prepare.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of seen this before with that season that Danny Woodhead had for the Chargers a while ago, where he was I think it was running back 3 also in that season, just totally on the basis of his receiving workload, which is kind of how Eckler's doing it, on the basis of receiving efficiency especially. So I think trying to flip him in the offseason is a really good idea. And I'd be hoping to get at least a first.
You'd kind of want what people were giving up for Tariq Cohen, or a little bit more than that, right?
More than that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the thing, because like James White, people are kind of fatigued on, but I think really the what you're looking for here is something like Tariq Cohen plus value, because as we saw this year, it's very difficult to sustain only receiving volume.
Mm-hmm. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.